quorum and letting the media ministry know it's okay to roll the tape. My name is Mark Schwain, and I'm one of the two teaching staff coordinators this summer here at the Village. And tonight I'm coordinating the forum, which is entitled Social Responsibility and Electronic Media, and hopes to open up some rather broad questions about just exactly what the impact of email and World Wide Web and lots of other things is on our understanding of our own responsibility as citizens, and in particular, how this affects issues of privacy. And the, I almost sat on a mouse, I guess. Even in simpler eras before electronic mail, we have issues of responsibility coming up, if you sit on a glass and so on. But what we're trying to do is to get at this large question of what happens to privacy, what happens to distinctions between public and private, etc. But we get at that by a particular, we start out with a particular story or case history. And some of you may have heard that read or read it at the kiosk, but we're going to start out with that. We have four folks here who will represent the characters mentioned in this story, but each has asked me to be clear with you that they may or may not, in this dramatization, to help us get focused, be putting forth views that are their own personal views. So it should be clear that they're kind of role-playing, or maybe role-playing, for the sake of getting us focused and moving forward in this conversation. So let me set the scene again and introduce the four folks we have here with us and get on with it. Something smells rotten in the state of Indiana at Purdue University, also known as PU. 2 weeks ago, Jim Snoops, who is here, and Jim, you want to raise your hand? Jim Snoops, a PU junior, was doing routine work to maintain one of the many servers that facilitates PU's vast email system. In the course of doing this, Snoops accidentally discovered files belonging to another PU junior, who's also here, named Alan Smuts. Alan, you want to raise your hand? Hey, Alan. That were poor Alan's not said anything yet, and we're already booing him. You, I hope, went to burner session, learned that you're presumed innocent here. Alan Smuts, these files were identifiable by their very titles as containing pornography, including even child pornography. Snoops, over here, reported this inadvertent discovery to his superior. The supervisor immediately convened a meeting of his advisory board, whose membership includes the PU attorney, Frank Weasel, here in my lap, and the head of PU's Women's Studies Center, Professor Faith Chaste, who sits straight across from me here. Tonight, we're going to hear from Chaste, Weasel, Snoops, and Smuts. Should PU open Smuts files? If they do contain pornography, to whom do they belong? PU or Smuts? If it's a crime to possess them, who's the criminal? Who is responsible for what goes over the internet? Is there any such thing as privacy in the world of electronic communications? And should there be such a thing as privacy? So these are the kinds of broad questions, but we're going to hear briefly from each of the four principals. And I think we'll start with Snoops to just give us some background on how you came on these files and what your own view is. Advise us of what we should do from here.
Okay. Well, excuse me, Mr. President, before you do that, as counsel, I really don't think we should have anybody say anything with Mr. Smuts in the room, as he is a potential litigant against the university.
From time to time, we need to remind university counsel that this isn't a trial, and that all of human life doesn't conform to basic trial procedures.
I'll withdraw the point, having.
So can we hear from Snoops here?
Yes, I'd like to speak to Mr. Smuts and say I hope you take good notes, because in school, I think they will end up taking action against you. You can get some ideas for your lawsuit to begin from this meeting. So I think it's good that you get to see the other side, you know, your opponents in this thing. My name is Jim Snoops. I work for the computer center on campus, and I was working on the server when I encountered some file names that led me to believe they were files that were actually pictures of pornography. I did not open the files, but the names themselves are very descriptive. Descriptions of what was perhaps on these files. I personally, as Jim Smuts, and I don't believe in using pornography, and it was quite a shock, and I was kind of reeling from this when I mentioned it to my supervisor, as university employees were asked to not make these kinds of decisions, whether to open them or not. We pass the information along to a supervisor who then makes the decision. I did not think it was going to come to this advisory council. I did not want this to happen. I do not think that the university should open these files. We do not know what's in them, but the titles are what brought us to this place. Although the server belongs to the university, I believe it would violate the privacy of Mr. Smuts if the university opened these files without his permission. There's no wrongdoing here yet. We're just here to talk.
Okay.
That's my position.
Thank you. So as far as you're concerned, having reported it, that's about as far as it ought to go. Well, we shouldn't be looking into Smuts' files. Let's hear from you, Faith. I think you're of a slightly different view.
Yes. Basically, I feel that our university here, Purdue, provides the internet server for two basic purposes. First, it's to facilitate student and faculty communication. And secondly, to broaden research avenues for all students. That's why we've set up this server. And from the university's perspective, it should be used for those purposes. If a student wanted to use it for other purposes, they would be welcome to go through another server or through a different computer, not ours. With these purposes in mind, the students are also expected to abide by Purdue's anti-discrimination policy, which states that, quote, Purdue University will not discriminate on the basis of gender. Smuts' actions directly contradict this policy. Pornography, by its very nature, belittles, exploits, and objectifies whichever sex is being portrayed, which unfortunately is most often women, and that's why I've been chosen to speak. Pornography will not be condoned on this campus, and Smuts has chosen to use the university server, and he must therefore be expected to abide by the university policy. He has not done so, and therefore my recommendation is that he should be promptly expelled from this institution.
Okay. There we go. So this puts, before we hear from counsel to give us a kind of legal perspective, we're still kind of in the moral realm here as to what we ought to do, what seems right. And we've heard from one party saying we have no business pursuing this further and looking into Smut's files, and another who says we don't really need to look in them, just on the basis of what we've heard so far, he ought to be expelled. So Smut, what have you got to say?
First of all, I'm very proud of my last name. It's been in my family for many generations. Point of order, these files have been, the description on the files is all that has been seen by Mr. Snoops, correct?
That's right, he just knows the title of the files.
Okay.
He claims he hasn't snooped and looked into the content of the files.
Okay, well, I would just like to remind some people of a little piece of paper that if you guys spent a few moments thinking about and writing a couple hundred years ago, it's called the Constitution of the United States of America. And the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated.
Would you care to read the second clause?
and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause.
Thank you.
Let me ask you this.
Smuts is not on trial here.
Supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
How do you establish your ownership of the files in question?
How do I establish my ownership?
The store on university property, is that correct?
My ownership of the files is simply established by the fact that it is under my password, which is known only to me and is established as a private mailbox, private realm, simply for me. So it is something that I pay for through tuition to utilize privately at the university.
Okay.
So, the content of my files is of absolutely no relevance here. The description, you can interpret wherever you want in the description of my files, but the content of my files is irrelevant, completely irrelevant. Now, if you choose to go into my files, counsel is right, I will be a litigant in the case, and I will sue the university for reading my mail. The university has absolutely no right whatsoever to read my mail. Just like you don't have any right to go into my mailbox and open my letters and read them. And if you were to do so and try to sue me or bring me into criminal court, it would be dismissed immediately. Thank you.
Okay, so Smuts is making a large claim. He's not saying, affirming or denying what's in his files. He thinks that's irrelevant. What's relevant is the fact, as far as he's concerned, these are his. They belong to him. It's just like opening up mail in the mailbox. And morally, he thinks that those who would either presume, as Professor Chase has, and we'll let her speak later, that just on the basis of what they say, they contain pornography, or even if they were to contain pornography, even if she were right, that would not matter. We just don't have a right to violate his privacy here. Because, as he said, he has a private password. His understanding was part of his tuition dollars went to pay for this server that the university provided, just like they provide library resources and food and other things. And he acted all along thinking this was his own mail, and now people presume to look at it. So we'll come to you in just a sec, but we want to hear from the attorney first, and then you'll be the first person to be called on. So tell us a little bit about where we stand legally on this whole matter. Frank Weasel.
Thank you.
There are going to be, and obviously this forum is intended to draw out a lot of very difficult privacy issues that are going to be caused by the internet, because it's a different kind of medium from any other kind of medium we know. And so you look for comparisons to mail, to telephones, to cordless phones, to citizens' bands radios. And the Supreme Court has decided cases on all of those media, so the question is, where is this going to fall? In this particular case, I think there's a lot of things that make it a lot easier than the case would ordinarily be. We're not talking about a university here that wants to look through everybody's mail all the time. We're talking about a case where, serendipitously, as he's looking around, we might have enough information to constitute probable cause. And when it comes to probable cause, we can talk about reading mail, but if a police or a public university has probable cause that in private mail there is contraband, they can open up the mail too. What really is the killer for Smuts in this case is that there's probable cause not only to believe that there's evidence of crime, but that the kind of crime involved is in fact contraband. That is, under both Indiana law, where this is set, and federal law, if the material is obscene, it can't be legally owned by anybody. It has a kind of a non-property status, and it simply gets confiscated. If I think you're guilty of a crime and I take a gun to help me prove it, when I'm all done with the trial, I have to give the gun back to you, because the gun is, after all, your property, and I'm just taking it for evidentiary purposes. But if I seize your marijuana, I surely don't have to give it back to you. right? Because that's officially contraband and there's no right to possess it. That's currently where obscenity sits. And I love your Fourth Amendment argument. The problem is the Supreme Court hasn't read it as carefully as you have over the last 30 years. And what they will probably say, and there's an internet case coming up next year, we're sure, what they're probably going to say is that while so long as this medium remains as unregulated as it is, you probably have no reasonable expectation of privacy in almost anything in it. It's so easy to hack into that if you want privacy, go somewhere else. Or, as a practical matter, what you could have done here, as not you personally, but Smuts could have done here, is...
Well, I am Smuts.
Yeah, I know you are, and you're proud of it. It's a long history, I understand that. What you could have done is simply given these files names that don't tip the snoops off.
And that's...
He has freedom of speech to name any file whatever he wants to.
Sure.
I wouldn't name my files that, but I don't think you'd be the first person to name a file after a swear word or something upsetting.
Right.
He's got freedom of speech. Let him name it what he wants.
Oh, yeah, he has freedom of speech, but speech has consequences is the problem. I have freedom of speech to write a placard outside my dorm room that says, I have marijuana in my room. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm free to say that, but it may also supply probable cause to the police to come up and search. That's the sort of problem with the speech here.
Okay, we're going to open it up here first, and you were first to get in.
I think it's an important question. I haven't asked that. By the way, my name is Bill Campbell. I'm Director of Information Security Engineering at Fidelity Investments. I'm in the business of this sort of thing. Confidentiality and security of information in an electronic form. One of the things that hasn't been asked or answered in this forum so far is, does Purdue University have a published policy called acceptable use for...
Yes.
It does.
And
what are the terms of that policy? Has it been communicated clearly to the population of students at Purdue? They have to sign something acknowledging that they accept this policy when they get an account.
Yes, they do, but that never means at a university that it's been clearly communicated to the students. It means that somewhere in the rush of orientation, they've signed off on this paper. And they've been given 20 pages, and they've taken it home to look at it. But yes.
And does the policy include a clause about reasonable expectation of privacy?
Yes, it does, and reserves ownership. In all of the files within the university, too.
To the university?
Yeah.
I think that Smuts has no leg to stand on.
Did I sign that?
Point of order.
Do you recall signing such a thing?
Well, I remember getting my dining hall preferences down. Because if I did sign that, then I agree with the attorney that. And Mr. Security,
then. I'm not sure there's 50% of the universities in this land who can't find the piece of paper you signed, either.
Let's broaden this out a bit, I mean, from the particulars of this case, because things have been said in passing. You made a remark just a moment ago that is important, I think, and you made a remark in passing about one ought to simply presume, given the character of this media.
Say, Mark, before you broaden it, I'd like to ask a question of Snoops on these particular facts, could I?
Oh, sure.
Mr. Snoops, you said that you were really upset about the titles of these files.
Yes.
And you could tell just from those titles that they contain pornographic material?
I do not know if they contain pornographic. They described very graphic images, but the words did, but I never looked inside the files to see if they were actually files, pictures.
And the words were very graphic and upsetting?
To me, yes.
And you were so upset that when you went and saw your supervisor, you asked he or she what to do?
Correct. And then I later regretted that decision because it's come to this. And
would you tell us the names of the files that you
got?
Yes. I would be embarrassed to repeat that.
That's all right. This is a forum, and the content that you have given is very important, and Mr. Smuts is entitled to know that, to test your veracity, or if you were just snooping.
I was not snooping. I was just performing my job.
If you weren't snooping, tell us the names.
I, I cannot do that. I don't feel comfortable.
You got a leg to stand on now.
He'll be saying the name in court.
Wouldn't you be able to tell by what type of file it was, whether it had a, you know, a graphic file?
And you don't know if it's a picture of his dog, Petey, actually, and it has a different name of the file. Do you know what I'm saying? He could use strong language, and it could actually turn out to be a picture of his dog or his house. Maybe it's not even a picture.
No, but couldn't you tell if it were a picture?
Yes.
By the name of the file. The suffix.
Technically, no.
You can
rename a file to any name that you want to.
Yeah.
So I can take a text file and rename it as .jpg, which would be indicative of a JPEG encoded image, but it wouldn't necessarily be. There's another typical problem, which is that you can probably write a program that takes any, you know, arbitrary stream of bits and can interpret it as any arbitrary other stream of bits, including an image. And so you can sort of prove somebody guilty by taking an arbitrary file and saying, look, it's pornography, I can run through this special filter I wrote for the purpose to create a pornographic image from it. Hmm. There are some typical problems with this.
What was critical?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Could I speak to Mr. Smuts and remind him that there's been great literature throughout the ages that has been thrown out of libraries because they were considered smutty or downright terrible for children to read, and this has happened even recently. So I would say to you, you know, yes, go along with your right to say what you want to say.
Catch you in her eye.
Let me just ask people here, to address this broad question that came up in passing, namely that we ought, unless there have been certain documents signed, policies established, and so forth, sort of presume that if we work for a corporation or a university or whatever, that the folks there who supply the servers, and I think this was in a way your point, Professor Chase, for certain purposes, which you specified at the university, simply have access whenever they wish, for whatever reason, probable cause or no, to read these things. And therefore, the presumption that we have out of habits that in our regular snail mail, it would be a crime to open it up. We simply, as long as we're using facilities and servers and so forth that's supplied by IBM, Purdue University, are very naive to have that same set of presumptions. Is that what, just why don't we start with you since this is your business, is that right that we're naive to presume that we have that kind of privacy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you are not using what we call strong cryptography to protect your files, chances are very good, depending on where you work or you go to school or whatever, but chances are very good that your data is not well protected at all. Mm-hmm. I suspect that, you know, as far as Mr. Smuts's materials being private, I could be into his account in a matter of minutes, if not seconds.
Okay. So it's a matter of fact that it's easy to access my private correspondence on email, and that's what you've said as well. But I want to raise just kind of the moral question. Does this feel right to you folks that you're using email on a server supplied by your workplace? And somehow you have assumed, out of old habits, that this is private, you know, that the university is not kind of cruising around randomly reading your email. We've heard it can be done, but should it be done? Is it the kind of thing you feel like is okay? Yeah.
I also work in a university setting, and I know that it can be done, and my understanding is my university has a right to read my email and maybe even listen to what I say on the telephone. I don't believe that's an appropriate action for a university or any employer to be taking. And then I wonder, even if I am conducting university business, which the university doesn't like, maybe I'm sending email to a colleague complaining about the chancellor of my university because I don't like the way that the chancellor is funding or not funding my department, that could conceivably a hard copy of that could wind up on the chancellor's desk, thanks to Mr. Snoops, who is the network manager.
He's the despicable.
Okay. But there's a difference between being an employee of a university and a student of a university.
I think the students have more protection than I do.
I think so. And we did have a case at the university here where the professor was using an adult pornography and child pornography. And he lost his job, and he also was convicted on a child pornography criminal charge. And I don't, well, whether ACLU got involved, I can't recall if they did. He was an employee of the university using an apparatus of it. And also, I think the question I think was mine was he doing this during work time? I mean, is somebody paying him by the hour to do this? But that's a very different kind of student.
But those don't apply to students, because students need to use sometimes computers 24 hours a day. They need that access. So there's no such, you know, students are not employees and they don't have work time. It always, 24 hours a day could be work time.
But the university,
there's lots of places at the university that you have privacy. And for students who live on campus, you have dorm rooms. For all students, you have the student health center. Those records are considered private. Outside insurance companies, other entities cannot look at your medical records at school. Your phones, you should be expected that your phone lines are intact and that your conversations cannot be listened to. So there are several places on campus.
Not in my office.
I would say most colleges, there are several places that I've listed that you should expect privacy. An email falls under that because it's a form of communication. You should expect it to be private.
Okay, Professor Chase, and then back here, Michael.
I think it's really important to go back once again to why the university has set up internet access in the first place. That it's not a means to bash your professors or any of that. That's not what it is set up for. And when it is used for purposes other than that, then the university does have a right to say, hey, this isn't okay. The university gives you my university gives you a P.O. box too. If you are using the P.O. box to house chipmunks or something, the university could come in and say, that's not an appropriate use of what we've given this to you for. And I think in some ways it's similar to that.
Professor Chase, let me give you a hypothetical. I have a daughter who's at another college that I frequently write on internet. You know, we correspond back and forth. And she says interesting things to me and I to her. I don't think that falls in any of your categories. Would the university, in your judgment, just have a kind of a presumptive right to kind of read this mail and see what it has to say?
I think that they do. I think perhaps that you and your daughter are not maybe being, should maybe not confess personal matters in those things and are at risk in doing so. And so if you wish to say personal things to your daughter, perhaps snail mail, as you call it, would be the better way to correspond.
So as far as you're concerned, we're being immoral just using the internet for this purpose, regardless.
I don't think we're being immoral. I think that you're taking the chance. You're taking the chance that the university is a risk.
Yes, Michael.
At the university where I teach, part of what's in with the orientation as well as the university's policy about what's acceptable or not acceptable for students in terms of using internet and access is also the warning that these files are not necessarily secure and that they can be broken into, which happens all the time. And usually the policy is that about every 6 weeks you're asked to change your access codes because hackers of one kind or another can get in quite easily. And they don't have that sophisticated a system, if indeed it is for research and pulling things down like that. So students are warned that these are not necessarily secure files. But again, that all comes out in orientation, and we know how students read orientation handbooks.
Okay. You've been patient, and then back to you, and then over to counsel.
I work in an engineering firm where we just put an internet policy in place about a week ago. And according to our IT manager, about 70% of the traffic over the firm on the internet is pornography.
70%?
That's what they're estimating.
70%.
70%.
Here's a, hold it, another testimony.
I want to finish my comment, though. I think the thing that we're forgetting here is that at universities and at corporations, internet access is a service that is being provided for a purpose. And people are very fortunate to have that free access. If they want to go do pornography, they can go pay to have their own account. And that's why I think that corporations and universities do have the right to control that access.
I just wanted to hear, there was another gentleman back here, I don't think you heard this. After she revealed the 70% figure that's estimated in her company.
This is a Dow Jones industrial company, engineering company, where they have pretty good, they make computers. So now you can narrow it down. So they know how to figure out what's going on. And their estimates are 80%.
80%
of traffic in the company internet traffic.
Inappropriate.
80% is pornography. You're talking about engineering companies. So.
Wow. I have to say, this does astound me.
What would be the definition of pornography for those companies?
What I think is inappropriate. So I don't think that they're clearly defining.
This is very specific. If you have an email account, you get the mail.
Right.
You know, teen sex. Da da da. Okay. No, I mean, people send it to get you. You know. I have an AOL account, and I have all the preferences to not get any spam. And half of my junk mail is pornography.
Oh, okay. This is helping now.
So you're saying
what you're saying is unsolicited mail just suddenly pours into you.
I'm not talking about that at my company. No, my company, I'm talking about people surfing the net and going to these sites. Well, that's what the IT manager's talking about. So it's a little bit different.
Well, but what I'm saying is that even if. But the half that comes in is, you know, not responded to in my case. The fact of the matter is that people are spending time using a significant amount of time using their email accounts in this Dow energy company.
It's intercompany? I mean, it's intra?
They pass it around. Sure, they pass it around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's both in between and... outside. Pornography, I mean, the part here that there's several higher level issues here. One is the degree to which pornography is used in this country that people don't want to face up to. The second piece is that there is an ethic in the use. I'm on a school board for a K-8 district, and we set up a policy as an honor system policy, similar to what's talked about here, where students have to basically say they will make appropriate use. We had a lot of parents saying, why aren't you controlling this even more? I mean, you know, you have to have somebody looking into kids' files, you know, on a weekly basis. I mean, there is an ethic out there, it's very polarized. On the one hand, those kinds of folks, and on the other hand, we had a whole other set of parents who come from the ethic that says the internet was, by definition, it was started and it was set up to explode all the boundaries around communication. It was set up to allow, you know, Russians and Americans and whoever to exchange information and completely freely without any constraints. And so there's a very big split out there that, I mean, I think the role plays good and all, but I think there's a much bigger ferment out there than this is reflecting. This is tame compared to, you know, the kind of arguments that I see in the clients I work with and just what I went through in my district.
Good. Well, that helps. I mean, what that defines is a huge tension that the media itself invites people to use it for multiple purposes and global purposes.
That was the history of
the internet. And yet, what's being invited on where you work, is that there be a very, very tight rein held on what seems appropriate here for people to do, even to the point of policing their email pretty regularly,
right.
So, which seems to be at the opposite extreme. And so the tension is pronounced and major in your workplace. Okay,
I think it's a very big issue, and a lot of companies and people are not looking at it.
Good. Okay, you've been waiting, Frank, and then we'll turn over here.
Just a couple of things. I think it's very different for students than for employees in a corporation in terms of this contract they make with the employer or the university, that we understand you'll look at the email and this and that. So contracts, basically, for the theory to work, there has to be some sort of relatively equal bargaining power. So I either work at IBM and sign this, or I don't work at IBM. But if I don't work at IBM, I can go somewhere else. But my guess is that students don't have a tremendous amount of freedom to bargain about this, that they have to sign it, or they simply can't go there. And it's a choice that's, for the most part, constrained. So I would not like to see us end up with a law that depended a lot upon some theory that they've agreed to this, because the agreement is, for the most part, false. It's especially false when you're working with a public university or a public school system, where there is, after all, there's not another eighth grade in town. So to say you've agreed to this really gets pretty empty. And I really think we need to divide two questions here that tend to get mixed, but we need to separate them. And the question came from over there. If we're talking about pornography or obscenity because it's illegal, then we have to be very careful about the definition of obscenity. And that's fairly carefully defined. But what we're hearing from here is the problem isn't that it's inappropriate. The problem is that it's gumming up the system, that nobody's working, or that all the printers are printing this stuff, and now it's having a business effect.
Well, there's also a sexual harassment issue.
That's right.
It's not simply the going up.
Right.
It's people printing out pictures on public printers. That's happening in my company.
But these issues that aren't that new, a lot of people fax things back and forth and photocopy lots of jokes and drawings, and that's been going on for 15 years or more.
Yes.
I had a question that will kind of change the direction here, maybe, and, which is, if an illegal activity is occurring, you know, an illegal pornography is being stored on a computer, does the college have any liability on this? If there's an internet service provider and someone posts a web page which is promoting some type of illegal activity, does that ISP have legal liability and so forth?
Yes, we've heard several times in passing that really the property of these things is, I mean, the university, it's their property. Therefore, one does wonder, are they liable for this?
They're surely not liable until you can show they have knowledge of its existence. With a system this vast, to say that the university is responsible for anything on it without knowledge of it, that won't work. But the key to this case, and I think, once the university gets knowledge that they may have this stuff on their system, not only should they open that file, they probably have to. Because once they have that much knowledge, they may themselves have some criminal responsibility, if it is indeed obscene, for not checking into it and getting it off there.
What's this poor Dow Jones company supposed to do when one of their people thinks, and some of them openly say, or her company, that 70% of this is maybe illegal? What should they do?
My company's responded to it is that if it is called to the IT manager's attention, if an IT tech comes into somebody's office and there's something up on the screen, then they go and investigate the account. They don't do it randomly. They don't do it unless there's a reason to think that somebody's spending a lot of time surfing appropriate sites. The other thing that they've also instituted a policy that said that the servers are not for the purpose of inappropriate sites, and they've defined that as pornography. And they're also looking into blockers. So probably, I would say that the next year we'll have a major blocker in the company's internet access, to block pornographic sites.
I see.
I have to go write some letters. Some of them may be pornographic. If anyone wants to eavesdrop while I write them out loud, or wants to get some binoculars, look through my window and see if they're offensive, I'm in room 10 in lodge 6, so.
Could you post those tomorrow?
I'll just post them. Or no, what I'll do is I'll leave them in a sealed envelope, but you know, if you feel like ripping them open, then just try to be real careful about putting them back together. Use some good glue.
I know the post guy. I'll
don't make the cuts too jagged.
We'll look at it for a moment.
Thank you, Mr. Smuts. Well, give him a hand. And now over to...
There's something I wanted to point out, and I think that it may be useful. I believe there's probably several, many people in this room that actually do use the internet, email, and that sort of thing. And there's something that you really need to understand if you don't already understand it, which is that when you send an email message, if you haven't actually explicitly encrypted that message for the recipient, it's as if you're sending a postcard. And sending that not only just through the United States mail system, but possibly through your corporate internal mail system, that sort of thing, too. Anybody that picks this thing up can look at it and read it. There's absolutely no obfuscation. And when you're sending it from you to your daughter, it's not just the university that you have to worry about possibly examining the contents of that message. It's every ISP and mail router along the way that it may have passed through, and it could be several between you and your daughter. And at every point along the way, it's possible that somebody could have examined the contents of your message. And so you need to be, I think, aware of that as users of these systems, that it's not private. And there's the moral question of whether or not it should be considered private, and that's an interesting question, but the technical reality is that it is not. And if you don't appreciate that, then you may make some mistakes in how you use the systems.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sure all of you, like I do, get a lot of junk mail in your mailbox, and this is frustrating. Even though we say we don't want it, the post office is required to deliver it. So I'm hearing that this man says he has tried to ban these pornographic messages from his server or from his own computer, and he's been unsuccessful with this. And this sounds even more frustrating. I like to be particular about choosing what I read. And I don't like the fact that this trend is happening, that I can be invaded in this way. Is there anything that we can look forward to as a solution to this?
Well, there may be some technological solutions. If they can block them coming in, they may be able to block that kind of junk mail, too.
Maybe we should just shut off our computers.
Well, John.
Before I came out here, I knew I was going to be gone for a month, so I called our EIS people and said, is there any way that I can sort of shut my account down? Because I'll probably have 1,000 messages when I get back for having been gone a month. And they said, no, there's no way to do that right now. You could just cancel your account, but then you have to realize it'll be about 90 days before we can get you back up if you do that. So I decided not to close my account, but I am going to have to. I'm going to have to spend considerable time, university time, just to go through those 1,000 messages, because I think some of them will be important, most of them not. They'll be from listservs.
Well, I think that these nuisances are a big problem having to do with the internet, but I'm interested in what you just said was the moral question, namely, it's a fact that these things have roughly the same character as postcards. Speaking for myself, and I would suspect for others who use internet regularly, we're not yet habituated into thinking of them as postcards. I mean, I get a lot of these, I'm overwhelmed in a way with email, and I'll get a letter from somebody complaining about something, and I'll hit the reply button and respond, and I may mention things about another individual with whom I work, or a student, or whatnot, which I wouldn't particularly think of as being in a postcard. I mean, it just, habitually, I think of it as something that has a kind of private standing. I understand. In fact, it doesn't, okay? And I suspect that, this gets at some of the root issues. A lot of citizens using this technology still have those kinds of tacit understandings and habits of use where they're using a medium that's completely different. I mean, they have no standing. It's like a postcard. No standing
or,
like
or
the private
card. Or even like, for example, if any of you have the older style portable telephones that run on 46 and 49 megahertz, not the new 900 megahertz digital ones, but the older style, those can very easily be picked up like by your neighbor's baby monitor or something like that. Right. And you maybe assume that your telephone conversation is private because you don't, but it's not necessarily. Anybody can very easily listen in on these sort of things. There's a lot of technologies that we just, I think we use them without fully understanding the ramifications of using them.
Should we, I mean, his moral question, should we as citizens be agitated about this fact that this has the standing of postcards? Should we, should this vex us, or should we work
for it? Where I stand right now is the larger issue of responsibility. I'm going to come back to the responsibility issue. When we talk about rights and rights to privacy, we also have to talk about responsibility. I think every time we talk about rights, this is from a card-carrying ACLU kind of guy, okay? And I've come to the place of believing if the kind of responsibility you're talking about is is the personal responsibility of like being smart enough to recognize that, hey, if you're going to use this thing, you need to know what it means to use this tool. That you can't just use tools without looking at what the consequences are. The other kind of responsibility, I think, is the more social responsibility, which is that because this is exposed information, that you have a responsibility to not yell fire in the theater. You have a responsibility not exposing children or other people to, you know, grungy stuff and nasty stuff. You have a responsibility for the content of what you put out in a form that is public, that is ultimately not private. Now, that's where I've come to at this point. But, you know, that's...
Let me ask, hold on, if you could raise your hand up, and then we'll come over here. Yes, back there.
I work for a public school agency, and this crosses several counties, and we were told in our training classes that if you don't want it on a postcard for your mother to read, or in the local newspaper on the front page,
right,
don't write it. So we don't. We were taught that very carefully. But what bothers me is for the computer equipment that we use at work, we have to be that careful. Yet we're dealing with confidential student records, and if you ever try to get into your child's school files and wonder what, you know, the truth and the falsehood of what's in there, that's pretty scary. And the other issue is that on work time, on work equipment, and having taken a training class through work, I know about the postcard and front page and your mother reading analogy. But I wouldn't have any of that training on caution. I wouldn't have that background information if I just got online at home.
Mm-hmm. Depends on your provider. A lot of nowadays are pretty, there are a lot of providers who put a lot of information at the front end. At this point.
Yes, sir.
I'm just struggling a little bit as we talk about this over the whole. There's an age-old saying that you can't legislate morality. Part of what we're talking about are ways to control and legislate people's actions. One part of me wants to say, give it a break. You can do all this stuff, put all the barriers, pass laws, but you're not going to legislate morality. Because it's a human enterprise that's dealing with that, not a legal enterprise. Some way that just seems to fit. Because there's always going to be people out there taking advantage of whatever system is put in place, regardless of how many controls you put on it. Because you can't legislate morality.
I guess I want to share my view, not as the character I'm playing, but I have a pretty skeptical view of the internet that I just use it for, I used it when I went to college, and then the company I worked for, we were provided with email accounts also. I don't think that it's going to get better. I understand there's these, you know, you can protect your email messages, but as the internet as a whole, what you see visually is not going to change that much because these are companies that are making money doing these things. They do not want to change their habits, generally speaking. These people who are providing what is offensive to us or to most people are making money and lots of money off of it, and they're not about to change. And I don't think there will ever be legislation that forces them to change. So, I hate to say it, but in my opinion, it's not going to get better. It's only going to stay the same or get worse.
So should we go home and pull the Netscapes off of our computers?
That's what I would say. And I know I like to use it. I use it for many things, but right now, for me, it's either use it or don't use the internet at all.
I saw you nodding vigorously before, Bruce, when out of character now, when I asked the question, the moral question that was raised over here, ought we really, to as citizens, be alarmed that these things, which we're tended, we still tend out of old habits to regard as private, just aren't at all, for the most part. Ought we be alarmed about that, A, and B, are there things we ought to undertake to do about it?
I think we ought to be very alarmed about it. I think that the particular problem that we kick this off with suppresses a lot of the issues because it becomes school versus the student or employer versus the employee, but collapse them and just say user. And now imagine this thing getting hacked into by people who aren't, that you don't have a contract with, you don't have responsibility to, you're not sending it to, they're just hacking in, or worse, the government's hacking in, right? I think we have every reason to be very alarmed and absolutely no reason to think that the Supreme Court is going to help. Because I guarantee you, however much privacy everybody in this room thinks you ought to have, the Supreme Court thinks you ought to have less. Where help might come is Congress. Boy, that's scary, right? But if there's not going to be a technological fix, and if there's not going to be a kind of a cultural fix where everybody just decides unilaterally they'll never hack anymore, then there has to be a legal fix, and for it to work, it has to come from Congress. My guess is that Congress is more where we are than where the Supreme Court is. They think it's gotten out of hand. They're going to take some steps to ensure more privacy. But it's not going to be the court.
There's an interesting wrinkle to this. You know, Mr. Smuts fully admitted that these were his files. If he had simply said, I deny that these are my files, I didn't put them there. Guess what? You have no way of proving that he did.
Well, and they'd be gone by now anyway in the usual case.
Right, a friend could have sent it to him, and perhaps he only checks his email once a month, and maybe he never...
That's entirely possible, too. Or it's possible that somebody's just... A lot of times, one of the things that hackers sometimes do is they just find their way into accounts and then borrow space on those accounts.
Right.
And they could just use it as a sort of storage point for files of theirs. He could easily deny this, and he could review any knowledge of these files, and there'd be no way for the university to prove that there is. But I think that... I'm skeptical about both the courts and Congress in terms of getting any relief from this. The Congress is heavily influenced by a number of venues or whatever. We in the field are working on technological solutions for these kinds of things. It turns out that it's very difficult and well beyond the scope of this discussion to even introduce it, but there are ways for you to protect yourself if you start becoming at least aware of what your vulnerabilities are, and the fact that just about anybody can, quote unquote, read your mail in the electronic form. There's lots of different ways that can happen. This is only one way where you got a system administrator that can peek in and see what's going on. And I think that in reality, in most cases, the system administrator would examine the files before reporting it. Not just say, oh, I'm stopping right here and I'm going to go talk to my supervisor. That would be a rare circumstance, I think.
Yes, Professor Chase.
Just as the professor, I think that in some ways we're sort of missing, like, to me, the most horrific part of this whole story, which is that as soon as, obviously we're not, like, I don't sit at home and through my own mailbox get pornographic pictures. And I think a big part of that is because it costs money to send pornographic pictures. You have to put a 32-cent stamp on there to send it to somebody. And as soon as it becomes free, what's happened? We're all getting pornographic pictures in the mail. And I mean, what does that say about our society and like our society's morals? I mean, that seems to me to be the greater problem here, that he has pornographic files in the first place. And what are we gonna do about that?
And that people are spending 80% of their time
doing
this. Nice.
What are their advantages to it?
Michael,
did you have
a... I was just going to ask a question to Bruce, too. are attorneys communicating with one another through email, let's say, when they're working on a case?
Not if it's sensitive. Not if it's sensitive. I mean, but my guess is attorneys are not a whole lot more tuned in than anybody else. I think most attorneys have the same habituation that Mark does and I do when I use email. I assume it's going to just who I send it to. I mean, that's just it seems to me right. And when I use a cordless phone, I assume nobody else can hear it. And I'm probably wrong. But sometimes it's better to act that way anyway, even if you're wrong. Sometimes it seems to me that avoiding the medium and finding other ways is more of a victory for the other side than letting them get some stray information once in a while.
One of the problems that we have, though, is that I think as, if I can dare use the C word, as consumers, we don't demand enough of manufacturers of these products, whether they be software, hardware, or whatever, in terms of the privacy and security that they provide. And we allow them to sort of buffalo us with really empty claims of security sometimes, you know, without. Unfortunately, communication security is a fairly complicated subject. It's like trying to teach somebody nuclear physics. And even though we may, you know, plug in the wall, and ultimately that electricity may come from a nuclear power plant someplace, it's not reasonable to expect the average consumer to understand the ramifications of what it takes to run a nuclear power plant. And perhaps we've got a similar issue with respect to communications security because it's such a complex subject. When you really get down to it, that the average user of the technology can't reasonably be expected to understand, you know, all the details, or even be able to make a rational demand to the manufacturer of the product, you know, for what does it mean to be, you know, secure in this telephone or in this email system or whatever it is. It's a tough problem, no doubt.
I think we have time for one more comment, and then we'll have to turn.
I have a concern based on the 70% and 80% of the usage, and also kind of in defense of Mr. Smuts, who needed to leave us, that there's real potential for witch hunts, I believe. You know, I didn't hear any estimates that 70 or 80% of the traffic, and of course the managers and the systems administrators and the deans and the chancellors at the university aren't providing any of this traffic. So I'm concerned that as systems administrators might be snooping and find that employee X, who for some other reason is an unsatisfactory employee, can be targeted. So I'm concerned, you know, if there is some way of identifying particular students or particular faculty members or particular employees, that this not be used, you know, as a method of witch hunting.
That's a concern, and I'll add one more. I rarely say the final word in these things, but I'm going to say it tonight. I have to admit this forum, Holden forums, by the way, are never supposed to reach resolution, and this one certainly did. I do think it succeeded in giving people a deeper sense of the complexity and troubling character, I think, of this issue. I mean, my trouble comes, and here's where the responsibility issue is very important to me, not from doing irresponsible things with this, but basically I'm coming to realize that in the performance of the responsible part of my job, which consists a lot of questions coming down from the provost of which one of these people do you think would make the best position for this, and what about this faculty member in your college, would he or she in your judgment do a good job of this, and why or why not? And it's on email. And I admit my habit is to still think of it as confidential, and I will write back and give a fairly elaborate account of why I think Professor So-and-so ought not be put in that position. Okay, so a huge amount of my email traffic consists of explicit judgments, positive or negative, about people. Now, what I'm suddenly realizing is the prospect down the line of my having to come down on a tenure decision on a professor and weighing in, let's say, on the negative side, and he or she says, well, you know, the dean's never liked me, and someone says, prove it, and I suddenly get all my emails subpoenaed, and all there's this traffic, a kind of, they can show a record of my having said, she wouldn't be good for this, or he wouldn't be good for that, and so on and so forth. And I admit that I take all of these things I'm saying to be responsible. I mean, the reason that they chose me for this, they presumed I had fairly good judgment. Now I'm making these judgments in venues that I still think of as confidential. I may as well think of them as a postcard, and they could come up in situations that would be very, very dangerous. So, I mean, basically the forum has made me vaguely paranoid now. And I think on that note, I want to thank the participants and thank all of you, and hopefully the discussion will continue on. So good night.